Are you ready for the future? Even as we enter a brave new world of AI and continual disruption, our core ideas of leadership and how businesses should be run are, for the most part, stuck in the past. Here to help guide us is Brian Evergreen, author of the new book, Autonomous Transformation: Creating a More Human Future in the Era of Artificial Intelligence. Brian is the founder of The Profitable Good Company, and he's held leadership positions in artificial intelligence strategy at Microsoft and Accenture. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Brian Evergreen, author of the book Autonomous Transformation: Creating a More Human Future in the Era of Artificial Intelligence. I have worked in artificial intelligence at many of the world's most valuable companies, most recently at Microsoft, where I worked in artificial intelligence strategy and co-innovation with C-level executives at Fortune 500 companies. Those experiences formed the basis of my decision to research and write about the next era of transformation beyond digital transformation, which I call autonomous transformation. I also began with the question of why so few artificial intelligence initiatives are successful, and what system of leadership is needed to harness the economic and societal potential of technology in the era of artificial intelligence. I recently founded the Profitable Good Company, an advisory company that equips leaders with that new system of leadership. And today, I'm going to share five big ideas from autonomous transformation. The first big idea is autonomous transformation, the next era of transformation beyond digital transformation. We've been working to transition from analog to digital paradigms, and the next step is to transition from digital and even analog in some cases to autonomous. But digital transformation has reached a point where it no longer has meaning. It has evolved to mean anything related to technology. So I researched and developed new phrases to add more clarity to this picture. If you go back to the roots of transformation, it means to fundamentally change the nature or composition of something. We've been calling all these initiatives digital transformation, but what about the vast majority of these initiatives where the nature or composition is not changed? It's the same process, it's just more efficient now that it's digital. The word that best applies to this scenario is reformation, vastly improving a product or process without changing its structure or composition. Therefore, we now have five terms we can use to describe these initiatives with greater clarity. The first is digital reformation, which we've seen in the airline industry. We book and take flights the same way. It's just more efficient now. The second is digital transformation, such as Netflix transforming how we experience entertainment. The third is autonomous reformation, which is moving from an analog or digital to an autonomous paradigm without changing the process, product, or structure. An example of this is robotics in warehousing. It's much more efficient and safer for humans, but it's the same process. The fourth is autonomous transformation, which several organizations are actively working toward, but we have yet to have the lighthouse example, the iPhone moment where autonomous systems have transformed the human experience or created a new market category. And the fifth and last term is creation, because reformation and transformation both assume that we're starting with something that we're reforming or transforming. But sometimes, depending on the market need, we need to perform acts of creation. The second big idea is that it is time to end the Industrial Revolution and disinherit ourselves from the system of leadership that's been handed down to us, which is based on a worldview that sees everything as mechanistic. I began this research process with the question of why only 13% of artificial intelligence initiatives are successful. And I had the assumption that the answer would be technical or have to do with industry applications or economic incentives. What I discovered instead is that creating a more human-centered organization is not a nice-to-have for the executives who want to go out of their way to do good in their organizations or for their customers or ecosystems. It's actually the differentiator between organizations who are seeing traction with advanced technologies and those who are not. And the easiest way for an organization to make that shift is to make one core mindset shift. And I'll share an example. What do you do when a machine goes down? You eliminate the deficiencies, and once they are gone, the machine turns back online. This doesn't translate into a leadership context because a team or organization is not a machine. It's a social system. And while well-intended leaders and thought leaders are already talking about the next cycle of the Industrial Revolution, I argue that we need to make an intentional mindset shift and begin to recognize all of the areas within our teams and organizations where we are leading social systems as if they are mechanized systems. I'll give an example. Disneyland is an intricately balanced social system, and the cast members, which is the name Disney gives to its employees who run the park, are an integral part of the experience. Imagine if every cast member suddenly stopped being friendly with guests, acting impatient or disinterested. The mechanistic approach would be a mass layoff and replacement. The social systemic approach begins with acknowledging that there are social dynamics at play and examining if there's something about Disney's training, policies, management, etc., that could be causing broad sweeping discontent, and effectively setting a strategy for the social culture of Disneyland with the same degree of rigor as a merger and acquisition or a technical strategy. I learned this through practical experience working with and seeing what was and wasn't working for many of the world's most valuable companies. They weren't describing it this way at the time, but the organizations who were getting traction with AI and other advanced technologies were focused on the interactions between their data scientists and their domain experts, for example, which is a social dynamic. The organizations who were having the most difficulty harnessing the potential of these technologies were usually made up of people who, yes, they did care about other people. They were generally quite aware of social dynamics. But the moment that they put on their strategy or management hat, social dynamics disappeared from the chessboard that they were looking at, and the only pieces they could consider were technical or financial moves. Frederick Taylor famously wrote in 1911, "In the past, the man has been first. In the future, the system must be first." And he was able to realize that vision. It's still pervasive today. 112 years later, I'm saying from a practical lens as a technology leader and strategist, in the past, the system has been first. In the future, the human must be first. The third big idea is future solving. If you ask most executives and thought leaders today, what's the first step that should be taken in a given fiscal cycle or strategy setting? The answer you're most likely to hear is that you need to begin with what problems you want to solve. But problem solving is the craft of getting rid of what you don't want, and it has no bearing on what it is that you do want. But it's pervasive. It's laid the foundation for bottoms-up planning, a commonly practiced planning cycle in which each team lists the problems that they want to solve, which are down-selected and grouped by their leadership, and so on until it reaches the top of the organization. This is an example of the dynamic I describe in the book as maintenance mode, stuck in a cycle of trimming, pruning, and making incremental improvements to their existing value propositions, which is a downstream impact of a mechanistic mindset. But this will never lead to an innovative breakthrough. An organization stuck in maintenance mode will never have an iPhone moment within their market. And since problem solving is a craft of getting rid of what you don't want, future solving is the craft of getting what you do want. It begins with envisioning the future of your team, your organization, or your market. Or it could be your life if you want to apply it to your personal life. What future do you want? For some organizations, it might be that they want to be able to guarantee there's no child labor in their supply chains. Others may want workplace safety issues to be a thing of the past. Still others may want their customers to be so delighted with their customer care experiences that they're more likely to stay with the brand even if there are product or process issues down the line. Once the vision for the future is set, the next step is to ask, what would have to be true for this to happen? And work backwards from the future, employing our most core traits as humans of empathy, creativity, logic, and reasoning to create a clear path from that future that we desire to the starting point of today, which significantly clarifies investments, akin to sitting and creating a strategy in a chess game before you pick up a piece. Your queen may be in danger, and you could simply solve the problem by moving her to safety. But if you have a vision for what you're working toward, you can move the queen to safety and advance your position toward your end goal. The fourth big idea is replacing data-driven decision-making with reason-driven decision-making. Making decisions based on data is a rational idea, and being data-driven is a significant improvement on being gut-driven. But it has stifled innovation in organizations for decades, and in its current form, it is an inherently mechanistic and unscientific paradigm. If I, as a leader, ask one of my teams to provide a data-driven recommendation, What I'm ultimately asking is that they produce a set of numbers on which I will justify my decision. The logic and reasoning of my team is not accounted for in what I approve, and the team is really serving in a computational capacity. Gatekeeping decisions through a data-driven lens sound scientific on the surface, but in practice, it has become unscientific. The scientific method begins with asking a question, followed by stating a hypothesis, conducting an experiment, analyzing the results, and making a conclusion. Throughout the process, data is collected to inform the analysis and the conclusion. In the prevailing process for organizational decision-making today, the process has instead become asking a question, stating a hypothesis, gathering data from past experiments and experiments others have conducted through competitive analysis, assessing target addressable market, etc., analyzing the results, making a conclusion, i.e. the investment decision, and then conducting an experiment. But rather than calling it an experiment, it's tied to specific metrics that impact the careers of the team that has been assigned to execute it, and it's called an ROI, proven in advance, initiative. In a surprising twist, investments in artificial intelligence, coming in at a dismal 13% success rate, have shined a spotlight on an important truth for leaders today, that this process is not only unscientific, but it isn't working, and it's time for a new approach, one that is more scientific and rehumanizes decision-making, fit for purpose in the 21st century. Reason-driven decision-making places human reasoning at the top of the hierarchy of decision-making, on the foundation of data-driven methodologies, by adjusting investment criteria to acknowledge the limits of the empirical data, accounting as rigorously for the logic and reasoning of the humans who prepared the strategy and recommendation, as well as the logic and reasoning of those in support of the decision and those against it. Leaders then sign off not only on the numbers, but on the logic and rationale of the experts on their teams and in their peer groups. The fifth big idea is the reformational economics of omission versus commission. Most people are familiar with the fact that Blockbuster passed on opportunities to acquire Netflix in the year 2000. What most people do not know is that Blockbuster built a streaming service 12 years before Netflix did that never made it to market. When Ron Norris, a consulting executive whose team had designed, built, and successfully piloted the first streaming service in 1995 on behalf of Blockbuster, called Blockbuster On Demand, received a call from a senior executive with oversight of the program, he expected a congratulations, gratitude, and questions about how quickly he and his team could bring this to market. Instead, he was directed to cancel the initiative altogether. The executive informed him that the new offering would eliminate late fees, which accounted for 12% of Blockbuster's revenue and was therefore not a suitable path forward. When Blockbuster filed for bankruptcy in 2010, this executive may have remembered the conversation he had with Norris and imagined how differently things would have turned out had he not chosen to cancel the initiative. But one thing is certain, that decision, despite disastrous consequences to the organization, had no negative impact, aside from opportunity cost, on the finances or reputation of the executive responsible. This is because leaders and organizations are measured on their errors of commission, risks and actions they did take, not their errors of omission, risks and actions they did not take. It is even likely that this executive included a bullet point about protecting 12% of annual revenue in his annual review. Errors of omission have a higher impact than errors of commission. They are a shadow force with the power to end an organization. As organizational leaders make decisions, they are not aware of what they're not seeing, the risks that they are not taking and learning from. Their errors of commission and their successes become a self-affirming loop until an internal leader disrupts the pattern, or the accumulated errors of omission have grown large enough to pave the path for a new organization to rise and overtake the legacy organization in the market. A social systemic alternative to this approach would be to account for every act of omission alongside every act of commission. As those on either side of the hierarchy of a given decision maker present decisions to be made, those decisions, including the other options that were presented, can be recorded. On a regular cadence, the decision maker and team can review the impacts of the acts of commission together with the considered impacts of the acts of omission, which can be researched in advance of the meeting. This could create a forum in which the team can discuss and learn, and the decision-making capabilities of the whole social system can improve. Imagine if, in considering which leader should be promoted to the executive team, the deciding committee could look to the organization's accounting system for a report on the net impact each leader has had on the organization, not only the funded initiatives and whether or not they were successful, but also the initiatives that were not funded and the acquisitions or partnerships that did not move forward. This would create a more holistic picture of the individual's ability to discern strategic and tactical opportunities and investments on behalf of the organization. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed reading the book as much as I enjoyed researching and writing it.
Thank you, Brian. That was Brian Evergreen with 5 big ideas from Autonomous Transformation, Creating a More Human Future in the Era of Artificial Intelligence. You might also like our book bite for The Datapreneurs, The Promise of AI, and The Creators Building Our Future. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.